Okay, we're on Genesis 8, toward the end. We looked at verses 8, 1 through 19 last week. This week it's all in there again, starting at verse 20, it's in your notes, down to verse 17. So it's the last three verses of chapter 8, and then down to verse 17 of chapter 9. So we're not covering all of either chapter, but I broke it up differently because I thought it fit better. Let me just read this. I think I'll just read it as I go, and I'll comment on the side as we go. So verse 20, this is after the flood. They come out. Remember, the dry land appeared. Then God said, told them to come out, bring all the animals out. You guys come out. So what's Noah's first act? Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So Noah worships the Lord. So Noah worships the Lord. Wouldn't that be the weirdest thing? To climb out of the ark knowing that possibly millions or billions of people died, and now you and those around you are all that's left. Wouldn't that be just the weirdest thing? Noah's response was to worship God. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the clean animals. We didn't know for sure what clean animals were until they were specified in Exodus. So there's some discussion there about how did they know, you know. And I think we brought that up a little bit before. Not a big deal to us, not a barrier. Just, we're not sure what the clean animals were. He brought seven of the clean animals, remember, and two of all the rest of the animals, male and female. So obviously part of the clean animals were in line with worshiping God as well. But even at this point, if you remember back in Cain and Abel in Genesis 4, remember they were offering blood sacrifices seemed to be required or expected or normal, however you want to say that. So they still were doing it from, and that seems to be instituted in Genesis 3 when God provided the skins for Adam and Eve as opposed to their fig leaf clothes that they made. So it still seems to be carrying on. The idea of a blood sacrifice being required, you know, as a, being acceptable to God. Now, verses 21 and 22, God makes three promises. God makes three promises. Okay? It says here, and the Lord smelled a soothing aroma from this offering that Noah made. Then the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. Now here's the three promises, at least as I understand them, as I break them down. God will never again curse the ground for man's sake. He's saying, I'll never do the whole flood thing. God will never again destroy every living thing. Okay? And then God will ensure four environmental processes. I didn't really know how to say it, but notice he has seed time and harvest. So you have seed time and harvest. You know, the ability to plant, ability to harvest. You have cold and heat. You have winter and summer. And you have day and night. We're not sure, but it might be, this is speculation, that there may not have been really winter and summer before the flood, if it was kind of the terrarium kind of thing. If there was even temperatures, you wouldn't have the drastic hot and cold. Just a theory, not something we can wholly nail down. But there's four environmental processes that God says will not cease. Now, that doesn't mean at certain places, at certain times, you don't have weird weather. Some people have a drought and don't have any planting season, and therefore no harvest, things like that. But there will always be this on the earth as a general rule. Okay, the next section here is Genesis 9:1. So God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. So God blesses Noah and his sons. Okay, God blesses. It's interesting, this is why I chose to underline the word blesses to fill it in. Today, this would be a curse. It's like, you've been bad to me, God would say, and so therefore I'm going to give you children. I'm just saying, right? How upside down are we? You know, people find out how many children we have. It's like, don't you know what causes it? I've heard that for about 30 years now, but don't you know what causes that? I'm like, yeah, God does, according to what I hear. You know? But it's like you would want to not do that, right? So notice he says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. What's missing from Genesis 1? By the way, these are commands. They're blessings, but he commands Noah and his sons. By the way, there's way more to this than meets the eye, because it also determines gender responsibility. If mommies are having babies, mommies aren't doing other things. They're caring for their babies. Does that make sense? It's huge. It's a total watershed issue. All right? What's missing? Genesis 1:28 says, be fruitful. Doesn't that look fruity, orange? Fruity, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. That's what he tells them here. What's missing? Subdue it. Fill the earth and subdue it. And you remember the last one? Have dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and over every living creature on the earth. Okay. So you thought that that was only in there once, didn't you? Genesis 1. This is just a quick handout because of time. Basically, I looked up like fruitful and multiply. It's not an exhaustive list. I stopped at basically Deuteronomy. That it brings it up in some way, shape, or form. By the way, as far as I know, subdue and have dominion are never repeated. So either Genesis 1:28 is in effect today, or you have no right to dig a hole or cut a tree down or to kill an animal. If that makes sense. Because you can't just pick which ones are in effect and which are not. There's no subdue the earth. There's no have dominion beyond Genesis 1:28. So either if the first three are not in effect, then the last two are not in effect. You can't pick and choose because there's no evidence of rescinding or whatever. Whatever rescind means, it sounds good. This is just a chart. I have the passage on the left column, and then who's talking to who, usually. If it has an X, it's the command. If it has a bracketed X, it refers to the topic of the command, but it's not a command in and of itself. So you can see here's all of these in the first column have to do with be fruitful. It's either a command or something that says or to be fruitful. And by the way, I stopped, like I said, in Deuteronomy. If you flip the backside, there's only a couple after Deuteronomy. But then the next one is multiply. It relates in some way, shape, or form. This is not something just found in Genesis 1. It's ongoing throughout the Old Testament. Fill the earth, you only see twice. Okay, and then the subdue and have dominion you don't see ever again that I've found. Okay, so again, and then what I put here is I just copied and pasted what we taught in August of 2009. That's a whole microscopic sermon outline. You can get the whole thing on the website. You have to go to 2009 to find it, or I can send it to you if you want. But that's just, are they for today? And that's my 12-point logic and all of that. So I don't have any more to say on that unless you have questions. It was just kind of how to cover something fast with a handout.
It would be interesting. The only thing I will say is when it talks about the dominion of the earth, say after the flood that this happens because the familiarity, that the animals had with the people at that time is all together different. Like you go out in the field today and birds fly all over the place.
Yep, that's my next point.
They fly all over the same wildlife. I mean, it's this. They have a fear for man now. They don't have the familiarity that they used to have.
Yep.
And that's one of the dangers of our environmentalists, because they want the animals to come into that.
Yeah.
I do too. Bang! I'm over.
Yeah.
Hey. After jam, that's not mine.
No, but she'll taste good.
Done at the end. We'll talk about the rainbow today. So anyway, so that just covers that. I believe that the all five are for today. I believe that he just reiterated it to them, but they still were able to subdue and have dominion because those were still all in effect. There's all kinds of stuff. It's huge gender, like I said, gender role issues right here. Male and female issues. It has everything to do with what the purpose of marriage is. We've talked about that in the past. It has everything to do with the blessing of children, all of that kind of stuff that we've covered before in details. I think when I did the Genesis 1, 26 to 28, I preached, I think, at least five sermons on that passage. So you're welcome to grab those from the internet, or if you're not sure where to find them, I can send you those. But I think even the whole wrestling of same-sex marriage and all that, that's like swimming without getting wet or something. It's like an oxymoron kind of thing because it misses the whole point of reproduction. Marriage isn't just for reproduction, but marriage definitely primarily is for reproduction. But it determines, like I said, the roles of men, roles of women, the intricacies and the responsibilities of a home with a mom and a dad in it, things like that. It's just, to me, it's foundational. The next one here, three new circumstances. That's what we get here. Something changed. More than one thing changed. But three new circumstances. The word new is what we're filling in here. Sorry, I'm going to change gears for these subpoints. Number one, and this is what Pastor Jim is talking about here, in the verse 2 says, "And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, on every bird of the air, on all that move on the earth, and on all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand." Number one is the fear of man on every beast, bird, land, animal, and fish. So number one, what has changed? Fear of man. I'll just write fear or fear of man. So as Pastor Jim kind of inferred, apparently the animals weren't afraid of people before the flood. Okay? As we most likely will understand it, and it will be true in the millennium, that animals were most likely vegetarian, as were men, as were humans before the flood. I'm like thinking, what a miserable... No, but again, if the weather patterns and all that were different, you would need a different diet than you do now. If the speculations are like, we have now ultraviolet light in a way that we didn't have before, we have less oxygen content, we have less air pressure, things like that, then our health is completely different, and that's why you'll see in a minute why the diet has even changed. But But man, something happened with the animals, and now they're eating each other, and they're afraid of men. Okay? So the lion shall lay down with the lamb and all that. That's true in the millennium. It seems like God will fix all that in the millennium again. Okay? Number two. Did I read that passage? Yeah, okay. Number two, every moving animal is given for food. Every animal for food. So, here you have PETA's worst nightmare. I remember talking one time to my boss, years and years ago, a different boss, a different place I worked, and they were on the Atkins diet. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'm not too familiar. I tried to go on it years ago for a little bit, and it's like, this is lame. I want to be fat. I want to be fat if this is what it takes. But it's high protein, low carb diet, so you don't eat a lot of greens and veggies or certain things, anyway. A lot of protein, eggs, meat, stuff like that. And so I just threw it out, and I said, he said something like, as God intended or something. You know, you shouldn't eat stuff if it didn't taste good. That's what we got, because apparently that's something Atkins said. I haven't read Atkins' books. I don't even care what he said, but it was something along those lines, right? And I said, well, not to pop your bubble, but originally everyone was vegetarian. He goes, really? Because it totally tips that Atkins thing upside down. You might be able to lose weight, but it probably isn't so healthy. Or at least you can't be adamant about it, right? But God gives every living thing. Look at verses 3 and 4. Every moving thing that lives shall be for food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs. Notice there's no limitation at this point. So we're talking about clean and unclean animals. What does that mean? Because they didn't eat animals at this point, at least not as allowed by God. You know, who knows what people did before the flood, disobeying God. As the green herbs, but you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is its blood. So you have to drain the blood out first. Okay? But every moving animal is given for food. What is every moving animal? Bugs, serpents, amphibians. You know, I'm not saying everything is equally palatable. But about everything under the sun has been made into good food over the history of time. You know, chocolate-covered ants or whatever. Never had them. Can't really say it. Ever wait in line.
The one that gets me is what the French think is a delicacy, and that's an escargot.
Yeah.
Snails. Slime.
Yeah. So understand, this is what opened it up. Now, speculation again. Stand over here to the speculation side. Why? Why would God open it up? If all of this changed, ultraviolet light and all that, it's what vegetarians sometimes struggle with today. They don't get enough protein. They don't get stuff. And it probably could be from the ultraviolet light, the environmental changes to where the diet requires something. So you get things by meat that you don't get in other ways. Again, God will reverse that during the millennium. So I don't know if we're going to have taco pizza. No. But no, I'm sure I won't care. If my bias against taco pizza is unholy, then God will fix that bias when I get to heaven. Amen. Amen. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, look here. Prior to this, humans and animals had a vegetarian diet. You can look at that in Genesis 1, verses 29 and 30. Right? And here's what it says. And God said, see, I've given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food, also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, to everything that creeps on the earth, and which is life. I've given every green herb for food. So the animals and human beings had plants and all their forms for food before the flood. After the flood, this changed. What changed? There's three new circumstances. The fear of man by animals every animal for food. Number three, this is a biggie. I'll read the verse first, verses 5 and 6. Surely for your lifeblood I will demand a reckoning. Now maybe this, remember the earth was filled with violence before the flood? What is violence? People hurting or killing other people, right? From the hand of every beast I will require it, and from the hand of man. From the hand of every man's brother I will require the life of a man. Life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, and you might want to underline this, by man, his blood shall be shed. Notice the reason. What is the reason? For in the image of God, he made man. Got it? Right? Now, so how would we say that? Man is now required to apply the what? What do we call that? Yeah, or? I'll call it the death penalty. I think capital punishment is equally accurate. I put it down as death penalty. Why is that? Because, by the way, it doesn't differentiate. You even see this later on in the Old Testament. If you accidentally hurt somebody, their relatives have the right to take your life. Why? Because they are created in the image of God. I remember having an interaction with Stephen Erfeld. He's kind of the national leader for the life action or life, I don't know, the Right to Life group, National Right to Life group. But he doesn't believe in the death penalty because he's pro-life. And it's like, well, that's funny because God believed in the death penalty. And for the very reason that he's pro-image of God. For the same reason you don't kill a baby in a womb, it's the same reason if somebody takes a life, you, by man, this man's blood will be shed. He is guilty. And therefore has to pay with his blood. Why? Because he took a man's, he shed a man's blood, shed a human's blood. So the death penalty there, okay? This is different. This is a change. This was not instituted before the flood. Now, to confuse you further, on the back of your notes, this is only a reference, not the full thing. We would call this a new dispensation. Or it's the Greek word is, I'll write it. Say that fast. Nope, say it the whole. Oikonomia. What does that sound like? Economy. Heard of economics? That's where we get the word, okay? Oikos is house. Nomia is law. It's rules. Rules to live by. Okay? Now, when we talk of the economy, it's usually the financial, limited to the financial rules. You know, the interest rate for borrowing money is this, and blah, 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 you know, the gross national product and stuff like this. Okay, but the idea, and you can just sort this out in your mind a little bit, but what was first? And you can look in the back, there's, most people, when they understand it, God works in, when we talk about dispensations, God works in different ways, at different times. Is that true or not true? Adam and Eve, what was their rule? They had one rule. No, it was actually eat of everything but, right? But don't eat of the tree. Don't eat from one tree. Okay, you can eat anything else. All right? What did they do? Okay, just checking here. Okay, number two, and by the way, these are on the back. I'm not writing them, but this would be the age of innocence. Before this, they fell, and now it's, they call it conscience. Okay, and it's basically everyone doing what they think is right. Okay, I'll put in own mind. Polygamy, violence, survival of the fittest. Okay, what happened there? God said, I'm sorry that I made mankind. I'm going to flood the world. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, right? We just talked about that. All right? This didn't apply anymore. This was just the law written in their hearts, so to speak. Okay? So we're on number three now of different, God works in different ways at different times. Now, what is the rule here? Okay, that doesn't mean that this, people don't have a conscience anymore. That's what they call the age of conscience work. But what's the next one? Has God changed the rules? Yes. He changed the rule for food. He changed the rule for how animals relate to mankind, and he changed the rule for men to hold other men accountable for murder. Okay, what do you have that? Then you have men holding other men accountable. And this is the beginning, if you will, of human government. It's expanded on more. Human government is, you have to determine, did they kill him? Did they, you know, it kind of, there's implication of someone carrying out the thing. It could be a family member, even, that can carry that out. But it, also other things, okay? You know, how do you know they're true, they really killed him or not? Things like that. Again, it's kind of in a seed form, but it changed. Now, are any of these related to salvation? This is usually the accusation of those that attack dispensationalism. Well, you saved in different ways at different times. No. No, no, no. These are house rules. Okay? Salvation is always through grace by faith. You say that as early as Adam and Eve receiving the garments from God. Okay, he shed animals' blood so that they can have skins. Got that? You see that? You see that referred to for Abel, who had a better sacrifice than Cain by faith. Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain. That's in Hebrews 11. It comments on that. When we get to Abraham, which we aren't there obviously now, God makes additional promises. He makes a covenant with Abraham. But Genesis 15:6 says Abraham believed God. That's faith. And it was accounted to him for righteousness. I mean, we're not saying that you're saved any way that you have always saved. You're not saved by works in a dispensational viewpoint. We're just seeing, all we're doing is observing that, oh, that was the rule. Now this is everyone's doing what they want, their own conscience, if you will. Oh, and now God adds some rules. And the rules require men to hold other men accountable for murder. How does that expand? In the law. Murder, kidnapping, rape, immorality, even rebellion can be punished through capital punishment. Okay? And again, it's because of God's righteous demands. It's not because of perfect people. Guess what? These people are imperfect and have to hold other imperfect people accountable when they cross certain lines. That was kind of a way to hold justice in a world of sinful people. Okay? So anyway, I just pulled that off. It's a church that I like a lot. But I could have made it myself or found others, but they had a pre-made one, so I did that. All right, so the different God works in different ways at different times. He has different rules, different house law. Okay? And that's what he's established. Now he's added to that. It's not do what you want, when you want, where you want. If you're the biggest guy, you win. You can marry all the women you want. You can kill anyone you want because you're the biggest and the best. Now it's like, no, you hold other people accountable. If someone kills somebody, the rest of the men are required to hold that person accountable and take their life. Not because they choose to, but because God commands them to. Okay, it's on that premise. Why? Because they're created in the image of God. Verse 7. And as for you, be fruitful, multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply it. God repeats and restates his blessing to Noah. So he just restates blessing. In case Noah missed it, says it again. Okay? Be fruitful, bring forth abundantly. Now, it could possibly be fruitful. Multiply might mean abundantly or whatever too, but I won't cover that anymore. Okay, the last section there below. God expands. That's the word expands. On his covenant. He made a covenant with Noah before the flood. Did you catch that? And Genesis 6, God made a covenant with Noah before the flood. Now he goes on and adds to it or explains it in more detail. Okay, let me read this, and then I guess it's all there. Let me read verses 8 through 17. Just follow with me if you would, the last section there. Then God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, "And as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you." By the way, who are those people? Everyone here is descended from Noah. Right? Everyone's good? All right. And as, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth. So God makes a covenant that includes all the beasts as well. Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud. It shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth." So it's Noah, but also beyond. It's the covenant of the earth. "It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." And God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." Who is the covenant between? I list three here. God, on the one side. Noah and Noah's descendants. Yay! And every living creature, birds, cattle, beasts that were on the ark. Okay, what does the covenant involve? Never will God cut off all flesh by a worldwide flood again. One of the arguments on Wednesday's DVD was, well, if it's a local flood, God, we've had all kinds of floods, right? God didn't keep his word, you know. It was a worldwide flood. The covenant is an everlasting covenant. The covenant is between God and every living creature of the flesh that's on the earth. Notice it has nothing to do with salvation. It's God and flooding, if you will. What God gave is a sign. Sign will be a rainbow. A sign will remind God of his covenant. Sign is visible indication of God's covenant between him and all flesh that is on the earth. Some people suggest that the rainbow was there before and God just assigned it that meaning. Others would say that, well, because of the change in the atmosphere, there wasn't a rainbow before. And there weren't clouds like we have now. And that's very possible. So then there were clouds and there's the rainbow now or whatever. So Who knows? Don't have an answer, just giving you some ideas, some thoughts. So I have my druthers. I think it's probably the latter, that there probably wasn't a rainbow. So, questions?